Hey there, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you so much for joining the Liberty Dispatch. Wherever you're getting this program from, we would just ask that you would like, subscribe, that you would rate, and that you would review the program. It helps us get it out to more people. And we are so excited today to have a special interview for you. And without further ado, I'm going to throw it over to the studio where Andrew DiBartolo has our guest.
Well, I'm here in studio with Harold Jonker. Harold, thank you so much for stopping in Kingston on the way to your Ottawa destination. It was good to have dinner with your family beforehand, so I'm glad to have you. Thanks for joining us on the Dispatch.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been quite a journey and just been amazing to meet so many wonderful people, and including your wife and your kids, and to have dinner out on your patio was Not something I expected, but I'm glad I stopped in.
Me too. Yeah, we were just joking that people who are watching this, who normally think that the studio is bigger than it is, are seeing the two of us in here and thinking it must be huge, and it's not. Basically, the wall, we're like 5 inches from the wall on either side, like it's pressing in on us. So it looks bigger than it is, but it's good to have you here anyways. Yeah. So there might be people who are watching our show right now, who are watching this episode, who may not know who you are, what's going on with you, why it is that you're on your way to Ottawa, this time for a less than glorious reason. So I guess before we get to that, set it up a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself, about what you do, about your business. Give us a little bit of your backstory.
Yeah, okay. I was born and raised in a Christian family. Definitely very thankful for my family that I had as a child, and very thankful that I was born into a Christian family, and always wanted to be a farmer, but for some reason God decided that my dad was going to start a trucking company. So in 94, he started a trucking company. In 95, I got laid off in the construction industry and went and got my license and been driving truck for 28 years. I enjoy it, love it. There's not a better way to see our beautiful country, to travel the U.S. as well. It's just been something that I've enjoyed for the last 28 years. 8 years ago, we bought my dad out. He's retired and still somebody that advises us, and we're very thankful for that. So my brother and my brother-in-law and I have owned it for about 8 years. I moved down to the Niagara region when I got married 25 years ago, because we were running into the U.S. and I've been at the same place since 97. I've been blessed with a beautiful, wonderful wife that's understands and knows what's going on in this world, and has been a great support. Mm-hmm. And we've been blessed with 13 children and one granddaughter. And yeah, 2 years ago, this world went a little crazy, or mm-hmm. almost 3 years ago now, right? Like it started off with 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and now we're here still hearing from a prime minister that their party is still going to push vaccinations on children. They're still going to do things that don't make any sense. They're ignoring science, and they're...
Have you seen the released audio? Have you seen that video yet?
No, I haven't seen the video.
So we just shared it yesterday on social media, and it just broke yesterday that someone called their Liberal Party MP, I can't remember what region, and someone called and basically said, hey, in light of the Liberal convention which just took place, why is it that you still have on the Liberal website platform the jabs to help us fight to the end of this? And they said, is it still the plan of the Liberal Party? And this person said, yeah, that's our plan. And so someone called in and recorded the phone call and then posted it on social media, confirming that, yeah, this is still our desire to implement some form of mandates, which makes sense because at the convention, Trudeau mocked Poilievre, who I'm not the biggest fan of anyways, but mocked him for bringing up jabs with Biden. So I can't believe we're still here, whatever, 1,200 days later?
Yeah, I actually, something like that. When I seen it on one of my chats, I'm not on social media, so I don't get to hear all the background noise that's going on in our world. But when I seen it on a chat, and I'm like, is that actually from 2 years ago or a year ago? Like, really? You're still on that path? And that's where our country is. It's in a weird spiral that you just wonder where it's going to go. Where is it? This going to end? And yeah, I've had 3 wonderful weeks in Ottawa. Definitely was very thankful to be part of that. I don't think me saying that's going to shock the prosecutor that is waiting to meet me tomorrow in Ottawa. But just the narrative that it still continues, and mm-hmm. they just don't want to accept the fact that science disagrees with what you've been mm-hmm. doing, right? It's baffling.
So you took over your dad's company 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And how many trucks you guys have? How many drivers you guys got?
We've been around the 25-20 mark for the last 8 years. When we bought my dad out, we also had the opportunity to buy another little small company at the same time. So we did that, and it's been a blessing in the fact that the Lord's blessed our business with great guys. And personnel is, who you have working for you can be a blessing or it can be a curse. And we've definitely mm-hmm. been blessed with, a great team of drivers, and some of them are family members, which, sometimes might be a curse, but it's not, it's been a blessing as well. And yeah, when this, convoy idea came up, I can't even remember which one of us found it on online. I made a phone call to Bridget Belchin and mm-hmm. Had a talk with her, asked her who else was involved, and talked to James Bowder, and we signed up from there, and it's grown to be like nobody knew how big this was going to be. Not a single organizer could have fathomed.
They still don't know.
No.
They still don't have numbers.
No.
Right? Have you seen the Unacceptable documentary that...
Yes, the one Unacceptable with a question mark?
Yeah, with the Maple Leaf, yeah. Where, Tamara Leach was saying in the documentary, we still don't know how many trucks were in Ottawa. We still don't know the final numbers. No. It's very organic.
Yeah, yeah. The first weekend we were up there, I had kind of already figured out, okay, we need to start getting these blocks organized a little bit that were up on Wellington. When we came in, we followed the police in, they parked us where they wanted. And I didn't stay where they wanted us to stay because it was like, this is not where we need to be. Partly we were close to residential property there along the canal. So we pulled out and went to Coventry, which was a camp just outside of Ottawa on the other side of the river. And that's where my truck stayed the whole time. And we just already that first weekend, we were like, okay, how many trucks are here? How many cars are here? And I had a bunch of people try to count their blocks, but it was still organic. It was still mm-hmm. moving around. And I think at that time, I'd have to look at my notes. I did write it down. Each one guy sent me text saying how many people it was, and it was 560 vehicles. But that was just a wee little part of it. There was still BC, Alberta, Manitoba, Saskatoon still hadn't gotten into Ottawa. So it was, it was just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like that first truck stop that we pulled into, I already knew. It's like, oh, wow, I can't. I got an hour to organize who's all here. There's no way I can. And the next truck stop that we was our second stop, same thing, pulled in and just like, you have no idea. So going up on that day, I didn't know what was behind me numbers wise. All I know is when we left the one truck stop, 45 minutes later, my brother calls and he was still in the truck stop.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I had sat there for an hour and was watching them come in. It's like, we can't stay here. The truck stop's going to get it. It's full already. And they're still coming off the highway. And that was an hour later. So we pulled out on time and it's just, nobody knew, but it was such a peaceful, loving, spontaneous, event that I made world history in the fact that for 3 weeks we were law abiding, we were peaceful, we were loving, like It was unbelievable.
Crime was down 80%.
Oh, it was down
in Ottawa.
It was down actually to zero. Downtown Ottawa, there was zero crime reported.
Well,
right, they're going to say one thing,
but until the police officer showed up, and then they all decided to be lawless.
Yeah, that's right.
by pushing everyone around with batons and smoke grenades.
Yeah, and the homeless were being fed beyond what they could have ever imagined. Like anytime we walked up towards the downtown area, we were telling the gentlemen and the ladies that were there, homeless, saying there's lots of food up there. You know, you need food, come on, follow me. And they got fed well. And we had so much support that we were able to, even while we were there, we were already able to share our supplies with the homeless shelters in the city. And then later on too, nothing went to waste.
Mm. Let's rewind a little bit. Prior to March 2020, how much of your business, I don't know if you have an idea of the percentage, but how much of it is in the States? Like how much of it requires over the border travel?
Yeah, 90%. Over 90% of our business is cross border. Mm-hmm. We run a flatbed company, so we do a lot of steel into the U.S., into Philadelphia area, Pennsylvania. And then we bring a lot of train parts back and whatever goes on a flatbed. So 90% of our work is U.S. bound and back from the U.S. Mm-hmm. But probably 98% of our drivers run the U.S. So already early on.
Let's think before jab mandates, because those come into play about halfway through the COVID madness. Yeah. So pre-March 2020, everything's kind of skipping along, normal life, I guess. And then all of a sudden murmurings of a virus that is devastating Italy and China and Iraq. And then March 2020, we have our 2 weeks to flatten the curve. So what's going on in your mind when all this is happening? Your family, your community, how are people around you responding to this? Are they skeptical, or they think, oh, it's only 2 weeks and we'll play along? So just kind of that initial, here we are, and now they're saying, you know, let's take 2 weeks and shut it down so we can get ahead of it so we don't overwhelm the hospital.
Yeah, like I think everybody at the beginning, like, was kind of like, yeah, this sounds dangerous, right? Like nobody could really understand the numbers. Nobody really knew what the truth was. And I just remember, like, last night I was sitting with one of my friends that lives down the road from me and going, yeah, but I can remember going, this, when it all started and what they said we needed to do, it was just like, this is not healthy. Mm-hmm. It did not feel right for some reason. And my wife, she reads a lot more than I do. She definitely enjoys reading. And when they were told we got to get this vaccination, even before that, stuff just wasn't adding up. And if you started looking at the numbers, you went, no, this is not right. And it was really, because I come from such a close-knit family with my parents, there's eight siblings in the family. And we always sat around the kitchen table, right? We read and prayed. We discussed what was read, and we discussed politics. So we were a very close family. And then to also hear, no, you can't go visit mom and dad. It just didn't feel right. And my dad had gone through, he had just gone through prostate cancer. The treatments went good. So that was wonderful to hear. And then the lockdowns and the mess started. So some of my siblings like, well, we got to be careful, right, with dad. He's got a few health concerns. And so I remember going up, delivering a load up into Sudbury and then coming down and saying, hey, Janice and I will do this load and then we'll stop in for coffee. Well, it ended up being supper, but you were still kind of going, okay, we got to be careful. So we're going to grab supper coming through a little town. We stopped and grabbed Chinese at a takeout. And this Chinese lady was just so thankful that you're here to buy some from me. Like it was like you could tell that they were struggling awful. And so we brought that meal to my parents, and we had told my parents, you stay on the deck, we'll be on the lawn. And but we got there, my mom's like, I got the table set, so just sit at the table. Okay. And then I have a bad habit that I have to go outside to enjoy, or I shouldn't say enjoy. So I went out there, and my dad usually never follows me out. And he came out, and he asked me, when are you going to bring the kids? And yeah, my kids, all 13 of them, love their grandparents, right? Mm-hmm. Opa and Oma. And I'm like, Dad, they don't get social distancing. And he said, I'm 73. I know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. Bring the kids. And that's what I needed to hear, because it didn't feel right that you're saying, no, you can't see your grandkids. And sorry, kids, you can't see Opa and Oma. And that really tugged at me. And I think that was the time where it's like, okay, something's definitely wrong. Mm-hmm. Just something's not right. And then when you've seen nurses losing their job or doctors losing their jobs because they disagreed with the narrative and they were trying to speak out, raise concerns, there was never any discussion. It was like, no, yeah. Sorry, sir. You disagree with the government and the media and whatever else and the narrative that we want to push, you're out. You're canceled. That in itself should already tell a society that something's not right. Mm-hmm. When you can't have a debate, when you can't have a discussion with your neighbors, that should already concern us. And sadly, our society was set up for this. Hey, you stay at home, you'll be safe. And don't talk to anybody, because if you talk to somebody, you might know find out the truth. It was just weird how it.
Yeah, the whole social distancing isolation thing.
Yeah.
Served a purpose, which was not able to discuss these things. Like normally, you know, lunchtime at work, or if kids play sports, right? Kids are at the playground, the parents are off having coffee talking, or if the kids are playing sports, the parents are in the stands, or whatever, work, all these places where you gather together and you're going to talk about what's happening in the world and you're going to talk politics, you're going to talk cultural stuff, you're going to talk what's happening in society. And so part of, I believe, the goal or the intention in telling everyone be isolated in your own little house was to prevent people from meeting together and having conversations like I was having with friends, which was something like this. Do you know anyone that's got sick with COVID?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know anyone?
Yeah.
I don't know anyone.
Yeah.
Do you know anyone? What? Do you know anyone who's died? I don't know.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you have dozens of families and you're like, and all these families have no one knows anyone who's died from this.
Yeah.
Then people start guessing.
Yeah.
So your business probably wasn't affected early on. I mean, you were the heroes, right?
Yeah.
The truck drivers are the heroes. So it's not like your business, like a lot of people, they were laid off or forced to, you know, go on unpaid leave. So your business is unaffected at the start of it. And you guys are driving all during the bubonic plague, which is supposed to kill you 10 times over.
Yeah.
Before any injection was introduced. And so apparently you guys had super duper mega immunity to protect you from the Black Plague.
Well, they said, well, the truck drivers, they don't see people that much.
Right.
Right. So we're not as dangerous.
Our elites have no idea what the average person with the average working person's like. They just don't stay in their truck.
No,
like they're not just hermits.
No,
that they think that they just have no idea what life is like for regular Canadians.
Yeah. Anytime we see somebody, we want to talk to them because we're by ourselves for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So anytime we got unloaded, and that's what I was asking my drivers that were going to Philadelphia, that were going to just outside of New York City when the whole big so-called mess was happening in New York City. I'm like, Are any of these places like short staffed? Is there like, and they're like, no. And nobody there knows anybody that's having a problem. And and at the end of the day, we can't deny that there was COVID, but the whole narrative was just totally twisted
And then as time went on, we started seeing story after story, like even our provincial minister of education came out saying the reason why they're not requiring PCR tests for teachers is because it's a 50% false positive and overcounting. And even the CDC eventually had to say that only 4% of all COVID deaths had no other comorbidity. So all this stuff starts coming out and we realize this is why it didn't seem as bad as it was, because it's not as bad as it was when you factor all this in.
Yeah.
So again, you guys have super immunity until the miracle juice is introduced. And now all of a sudden, you guys, doctors, nurses, or people like me at the time who was working in a grocery-ish store, people who had worked nonstop through the midst of this, surrounded by people who probably got it and recovered, or got it and didn't even realize it was probably a little cold.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, we're all going to die.
Yeah. And we're dangerous.
Yeah. And we're dangerous. And we're going to die if we don't take the jab, even though for a year and a half, everything was fine.
Yeah.
So now, all of a sudden, your business and the truck drivers, who people like our premier said are the heroes, and even the prime minister said you guys are the heroes, now all of a sudden, you are the fringe minority with unacceptable views. You are the vectors of transmission. You're going to kill everyone.
Yeah.
So what was it like? What were the conversations like? What was going on among your family members and people, drivers, people in the company, when the ruling came from on high that in order to enter back into the country, you needed to have proof of injection, or you had to be sidelined for 2 weeks, which as a truck driver is an untenable position. So when that decision comes down, or when they say this is what's going to happen, what are those conversations like?
Yeah, that what's going on? That was kind of tough, because already by that time, I personally knew, I'm not touching a vaccine that has not been tested properly. I'm not touching getting any shot that I don't know what it is. And our kids were facing already issues at school, university or whatever. And I remember telling them, even, listen, you're 18, you're an adult. This is what I believe. This is what your mom's been reading. So, really consider getting this thing. Mm-hmm. Like, we really encourage you not to. Thankfully, they all listened to their mother's advice, and I backed her up with that for sure. And then to have our employees and our drivers coming to us and saying, oh, Harold, I don't really want to get it, but what about Jonker Trucking? And I'm like, don't worry about Jonker Trucking. Worry about your health.
Yeah.
What do you feel you need to do? And they didn't want to get it, but yet they felt that if I don't get it, Jonker Trucking's not trucking. And we definitely made it clear to every single employee, do not get this for your job. Mm-hmm. We have some owner operators, so the guys that own their own trucks pull our trailers, and the same thing, like, I don't want to lose my truck. And I remember saying to one of them, and I love him because he's a family member, and I'm saying, don't get something to keep your truck when your health, and he's always has to go to a health specialist to get his heart checked. He was
He definitely shouldn't get it then.
Yeah, but yet it was an awkward conversation to have when you're trying to talk him out of doing something, and yet in the back of your sinful little brain, you're going, well, if he gets it, then he can keep trucking, but don't, right? Like, this, don't touch this thing.
Yeah,
and that's been, that was kind of sad to see a few of our guys get it, and that's their decision, right? And thankfully, They got it. Thankfully, every one of them seems to be okay. There's no side effects that in our industry, in our company, but you just kind of go, oh, they're all sitting there going, yeah, is it going to be me next?
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a young fellow, not as a truck driver, but he goes, yeah, all a bunch of my friends have already had side effects. The rest of us are all going, oh, are you next, Andrew? Or is Harold next?
Yeah.
Right. Like, and that's got to be, that's not nice to live with.
Well,
either.
Even, I mean, I think that one of the more obviously young people who are just dropping. I mean, we've covered so much stuff on our show. There was an episode where we talked about something that a lot of people don't know about, which is a number of Western students dying unexpectedly from heart related things just about a month before Western pulls their jab mandate. So obviously that's tragic.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to gauge it. But for me, I think what's particularly kind of gut wrenching, because, we have a young, small family, is the idea of young girls, women in their teens or in their early 20s who haven't started having children yet, who don't know, who now, after everything we know, after seeing all the effects of it, here you have these women who are single or maybe about to get married or just married, and now you can see them. Am I going to be able to have kids? Or how long am I going to be able to have kids? Am I going to be am I going to have early onset menopause? And that's particularly devastating to see that. So you didn't, obviously you didn't mandate it. But what, so then going forward though, so part of the discussion is, okay, so then how do you, so how do you navigate that? So the mandate comes down, and I'm trying to remember the timeline. The mandate came down, how much longer after the mandate coming down do you have people starting to talk about trucks going to Ottawa? Couldn't have been that long.
No, it actually wasn't that long. But at the same time, we had already gone to, you know, personally as business partners, we had already gone to a few protests in St. Catharines, Niagara Falls, and you always went home, right? So you'd have this huge crowd, but you'd have to go home. I went to one in St. Catharines. Our mayor in West Lincoln got in trouble for speaking there. And I was a town councillor at the time, and I was surprised that I didn't get into any trouble then, because they asked me, you know, what do you think of the mayor being there? And I'm like, well, I was there. I agree with our mayor. This is right. And oh, the local paper guy's just like, oh, okay. But yet, so we were already trying to speak out, and, you know, my record here with the, and the lockdown caucus, I was, honored to, meet a bunch of fellow politicians that spoke out and were willing to risk whatever consequences there were to try to get the truth out to the, to this world. And so you were already kind of involved. And we heard about this convoy going, and we said, yeah, this is something that we can participate in. And
how did you first, do you remember how you first
heard about it? I don't remember. I don't know, even remember. I think it might've been Tim. I'm old school. I have a phone, a cell phone. It's called a smartphone. It's smarter than me then, I guess. And I have email, but I don't have social media, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. I don't have any of that. So I'm not sure who seen it or which one of our three, and then we had a discussion, and this is something that we can get involved with. And because of my position in the company, I'm the guy that's called president of Jonker Trucking, but that doesn't, like, I just do whatever, right? Some guy comes into the yards looking for four straps, I go get four straps from out of our storage unit, and I drive trucks some days, and the next day I'm in the shop trying to fix a, help the mechanic put a rad in a truck. And so I'm kind of all over. So I kind of have a lot more flexibility than the other two partners who, you know, the one's a dispatcher, so he's stuck at the desk. Right. The other one does payroll and insurance and deals with that stuff. So I said, well, I have the most flexibility. So yeah, why don't I sign up, see if we interested in being involved with this. So we made a few phone calls and decided, yeah, this is something that we can be involved with. We definitely didn't take it lightly. And because of our Christian background, we really knew that, okay, we're going to go to Ottawa. We're, you know, how is it going to go? What's going to happen? We didn't understand. Nobody really knew.
Right.
Nobody knew the numbers, right? So you kind of went, we can be involved with this. And then it became something bigger than I think anybody
could. Yeah, it wasn't imagined until you got there. I can't remember the exact date, but I remember someone sending like an image or a PDF that was shared on social media talking about the trucks are going to be meeting the plan for this weekend. And then once it started going, so even up until the first day, you're like, what's going to happen? How many are involved? You hear murmurings.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the very first day in January, when the trucks start leaving from the different locations, they kind of came from a few different veins and then converged in Ottawa. Then you started seeing videos of people at these locations, the number of trucks,
yeah.
people lining up on overpasses.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, everyone started going, whoa, this is
yeah.
like we got to interview Benjamin Hobb, who's the director of Unacceptable.
Yep.
And his story, same thing. It yeah. started and he's hearing murmurings, but it wasn't until it just started to get rolling that he said, we got to go to Ottawa.
Yeah.
And so same thing for us here. It just starts growing. We don't know what it's like. I know I reached out, some people from kind of the Kingston Freedom groups reached out to the organizers, and we had a few different spots in the city where we would have locations where the where truckers would stop, and we actually ran out of room because Kingston isn't big enough, and yeah. so you had trucks kilometers before and after Kingston, and so we, I mean, we were able to. I think this would have been the this was the Wednesday or the Thursday before they arrived in Ottawa because yes. we're
yeah we came in on the
yeah.
Thursday evening.
Yeah, I brutal snowstorm.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And
I'll never forget. Pulling into the first truck stop and going, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to count this in an
hour? Were you on Gardner's Road?
No, this was in Gardner's Road in Fort Erie, in Flying J. That's where our first stop was from yes. the Niagara region. Sorry. Yes.
Yes, but here in Kingston.
Oh, yeah. We were at the, I just drove by the exit coming here. And
Gardner's Road 38, Harrowsmith, up to Harrowsmith is one way.
Yeah, and there was, we came off the exit.
There's a big Esso there. Truck.
Yes, and we were at the Esso.
Yeah.
And then we found out later there was also a farm that was set up, but nobody told yeah. us that. But it was
and then
just
for us, right? So where I am right here,
yeah.
when you go back out to the highway, there's a Canadian Tire.
Okay, yeah.
And in that parking lot, we had about 120 trucks.
Wow. Yeah.
And then our church at the time was right across the street from it.
Yeah.
So we basically said we would shuttle people over. So we had people yeah. from our church driving over, picking up truck drivers and their guests
yeah.
and we would shuttle them across the street to our church, and we had food,
yeah.
coffee, bathrooms, but it was yeah. this wild kind of
yeah.
experience. Yeah. And so, but even then we finally realized it wasn't until they got in Kingston
yeah.
that we realized there's no room in the city
yeah.
for them.
Yeah.
There's no room in Kingston for everyone. And this, again, was only one vein.
Yeah.
There was still another group that was a couple days behind, and then another group coming from northern
yeah,
Ontario the into Ottawa.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And so when they showed up in Kingston and there wasn't enough room in the city, then we realized this is not just 50
yeah.
trucks. This is
yeah.
a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And it
yeah.
was huge.
Yeah.
And then, like you said earlier, it wasn't until we got to Ottawa we didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And then you got there and you realize it was the most glorious yeah. 3 week long Canada Day celebration.
Yeah. And I got to be careful of what I do say, but at the end of the day, you feel that you need to bring the truth out to this world. And, you know, I'm not looking forward to this long out court case that I'm going to be facing, but at the same time you go, what really struck me was about a week before we actually left, you started to realize there's something bigger going on than what we could have imagined, because people were calling and emailing. I'm an elder in my church, and I usually use my iPhone for my agenda for our meetings. But that Wednesday night, I'm like, I can't bring my phone into the meeting because it's nonstop. So I had a meeting for an hour and a half. And you come out of this meeting and you've missed 15 emails, 20 texts, 7 phone calls. And I mean, every single one. And this was going on all day. So basically, even before I left Ottawa to go to Ottawa, I was kind of like, oh, wow. Like to hear people saying, you guys are our last hope.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty sad. And that really struck me that, okay, the truck drivers are our last hope.
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong here. To even the amount of people, like it was just nonstop support. And then you were saying earlier, like that, to see the bridges was just like yeah. Hamilton,
every
Ontario,
overpass.
Yes.
And every overpass.
Yeah.
Without exception.
Yeah.
Had people.
Yeah.
Every single one.
Yeah. And certain cities or towns were just huge,
yeah.
definitely. But yeah,
as the trucks were leaving. Yeah. So because I wanted to stand on one of those overpasses yeah. to see it, but we were busy setting up for the trucks coming in.
Yeah.
But my wife took our kids out both the Thursday when the trucks came in and then the Friday morning, just one overpass east of us as they were leaving. And it was cold. It was minus 30. These were some of the coldest days of the year.
Unbelievable.
And it was full of families.
Yep.
It was. Yep. And then I remember when, just actually heading into Ottawa eventually the first time that I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unreal.
Yeah. It was, it's not typical Canadian, but just unbelievable Canadian, right? Like
one of the things,
one of the things sticks with a flag tied to it.
One of the things I found about this whole experience was I think people found a reason to be proud to be Canadian again, where that had been squashed.
Yeah.
Especially because the Canada Day prior, they were really trying to push the residential school thing and they were trying to cancel Canada Day. And people were talking about, can we celebrate Canada Day? It's colonial and the flag is this blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So there was this effort, right? And our prime minister was talking about, we don't even have there is no national identity. So there's this effort to squash what it means to be Canadian.
Yeah.
And for the first time in a long time, I think Canadians said, no, I'm proud to be Canadian because we celebrate things like freedom.
Yeah.
We celebrate things like being able to be united and love one another, even though we're different.
That's right.
That we can peacefully gather.
Yeah.
And people reclaimed these symbols which had been lost. And I think that was special for a lot of, I personally felt that way. I felt that there's never been this deep, deep feeling inside of me. I'm proud to be Canadian. It's never been so strong.
Yeah.
But over the course of those several weeks, I found myself saying, I can be proud of this. If when people think Canada, they think this.
Yeah.
They think of these people doing this. Yeah. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. And what was really, because I run the US a lot, you actually hear sometimes. And American people are great people. And I love being able to talk to people. That's what I enjoy about driving. You get to go into a factory and talk to somebody as they unload you and whatever. And they sometimes ask the funniest questions, though. Like, oh, you're from Canada. You know how to build an igloo.
Yeah.
No, I've never seen one. What? Oh, you don't have polar bears out in your backyard? I'm like, no, dude. Where I live is just as far south as California.
Yeah. And they're looking at you all the time.
Yeah. But to see them waving Canadian flags, like, I mean, that was like, oh wow. That's unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was something.
Well, there were a lot of trucks that came up from the States too in support as well.
Yeah.
Which is kind of wild.
Yeah.
So you know, it's funny you bring up people saying that you're our hope, you're our last hope. But I think one of the things I felt when I was in Ottawa in having conversations with people there, even just seeing people, just seeing their face.
Yeah.
The sense that I got was that, like you said, that there were a lot of people in Ottawa who behind their eyes was this kind of hopeless, if this doesn't work.
Yeah.
If this doesn't yield the result we want, then either my job is done or I'll never be able to see family members again. Or people are basically saying that then our country's lost. Like there was a massive hopelessness in the midst of this. And I think that they'd cling to anyone who would have been a symbol of being able to bring hope and end this thing.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think people threw their support. And the reality is that I think the truck drivers were the first person en masse to be able to gather. I mean, I say with sadness and shame that it should have been.
Yeah.
It should have been pastors in the first several months gathering together at city halls and provincial houses of parliament. And I mean, if 1,000 pastors showed up at Parliament Hill early on.
1,000 churches.
Yes.
Right? Well, I mean, I know what you mean. But
right. Because then you would have had 1,000 elders plus.
Yeah.
So right. if they said no, it's our job to
discern the truth.
Right. To tell the state you've gone too far.
Yeah.
If they had done that, I think it would have played out different. But they dropped the ball, and then everyone else complied.
Yeah.
And so here you have people saying, no, this is, and then how they treated truck drivers, what they said about the people who were the heroes. Same, like you said, same with the doctors and nurses who were fired for not parodying the narrative, even though they were the heroes as well.
Yeah.
Early on.
Like, it was actually unbelievable. And to have a conversation with a guy in Ottawa, and he asked me when he found out that I'm an elder in my church, and he's like, well, where were the churches in this? And you kind of didn't have a word to say to him, right? I'm like, yeah, I know. I don't know. But right away you're already, oh, well, then you're asking, where's the churches in this? So right away I'm thinking, oh, so you're a Christian. And so I asked him, are you a Christian? He's like, no, I'm not a Christian, but where were the churches in this? Mm-hmm. So it just goes to show the world was looking for a guidance. The world was looking, and we dropped the boat. Definitely. Mm-hmm. But also to have, and this might sound stupid, but to have a good looking girl come up to you on the beach in early spring and say, were you a truck driver in Ottawa? It's like, yeah, I was, right? And she goes, you saved my life.
Wow.
Right. And I've had that probably 5-6 times, not necessarily with a young lady, but to see that, like,
how do people, so expand on that. So do they, like, how do they, so what, how is that? Like, I'm not denying it. I'm not asking for proof, but I'm curious.
What's
the story? Okay.
We gave them something that they say.
So save my life. Like,
the government's failing us.
They were depressed. Churches they were are maybe failing thinking us. About.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Like this. And the fellow that was walking with her said the same thing. He said, yeah, we're just talking about where our lives were. And we noticed you standing there with a t-shirt with a truck on it. And that's why we came up to you. He goes, but we were talking about this life was, we were done. Mm-hmm. We had nowhere to go. We didn't know what to do. So this gentleman said as well, I was thinking of ending my life. What do we have to live for? Mm-hmm. And then you guys came. And it's that's been the sadness of it all, really, that, you know, we've always thought we could trust our government, right? We've been taught that we got to honor our government, but not when they're lying.
Mm-hmm.
And then our medical system failed us. And sadly, a lot of churches did too. Mm-hmm. And that it's been that stuff, you know, to discern the truth. That's what we're called to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess we didn't.
No, we, and I mean, it could be said about the broader population as well. I think that they let comfort and convenience, or the simple fact is they knew where to tug, right? Like people who, I know people in my own family who were told, unless you do what we say, you won't be able to see elderly family members.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people they were really torn over, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
But they knew where to pull. For some people it was traveling again to visit family members. For some people it was your kids able to play hockey. So they just knew there were these different areas where if we tug here, we'll get them to do what we want. And people made the decision, and many people regret it. They hate that they had to make that decision. And thankfully a number of people after, you know, two rounds said, okay, that's it. We're not doing this dance anymore.
We're not risking anymore.
Yeah. Which is, I'm glad for that, but it is a sad place. And so, you know, Ottawa was, you know, what happened in Ottawa for those 3 weeks, I've told people is kind of this generation's Woodstock. It was a time that it's not going to be repeated because it was so organic, and because the circumstances, it's not repeatable. I don't know if I'll see something like that again. And I have very fond memories of it, and I'm glad for it for a number of reasons. I think one of the primary reasons I'm glad is because of the big curtain that's been pulled back, right? The man behind the green curtain, the Wizard of Oz, who's been manipulating all the machines, who's been saying, don't pay any attention. Now the curtain's pulled back, and now we really know what our federal government thinks about everyday citizens. Yeah. Yeah. We know what they think about the church. They know what they think about them being tyrants. They know, we know now how they're going to respond. So that's a good thing. But part of how that's discouraging is we see almost vindictive and petty nature behind our elected officials that, you know, like a small tyrant that can't get people to do what they want, they'll just try to get as much as they can. And even people who are still getting court summons to deal with their arrive can tickets from over a year ago.
Yeah.
It's just so silly.
Yeah.
So you're here in Kingston, and it's not just because you came all the way here to have honey garlic sausages in my backyard.
Though no, but it was worth it.
It might have been worth it just for that.
It was worth it.
So yeah. That's not why you're here. You're here. You're on your way to Ottawa. Kingston's on the stop. So for people who may not know, which might be surprising at this point, but there might be some of those people. Why are you on your way to Ottawa? Tell us about the last couple weeks.
Yeah. So every once in a while, I end up having to do a beautiful run to BC. Every 2 weeks, we have a candy run for Scholten's Candy. So if anybody sees Cottage Country candy in your variety store, grab a bag. I was on my way to BC, running across Canada with a bunch of drops. And the Wednesday, so I guess 2 weeks ago, the Niagara police showed up my house. And my son sent me a text saying, I just gave your number to the Niagara police. Oh, I'm like, really? That's not good. But I missed the phone call while I was getting my drop off in Edmonton. And you can't call it back. Like, the police call is always no caller ID. Mm-hmm. So I knew, okay, they tried calling me three times. But you can't call them back. So I continued on to Calgary, had a beautiful evening in Calgary with, met Danielle Smith and Theo Fleury. And the next day carried on, and I was just at a break check stop in the mountains, and fortunately had service, and an officer from Niagara region called me, informed me that the Ottawa police had put out asked them to arrest me or whatever they call that. Like, so they had requested them to pick me up and process me. Since I was gone, they couldn't do that. So, but they were still trying to get a hold of me. So I said, well, okay. It's kind of what I thought, but my wife had thought, oh, they're probably wanting to talk to you about a request I had put in for a police check. Mm-hmm. And I kind of let her think that Wednesday evening. It's like, yeah, okay, that might be right. But I kind of had an inkling of what it was about. I don't know why. And so that Thursday they got a hold of me, and I told them I'm probably going to be flying home Saturday. I can turn myself in then, which I flew home Saturday. We normally don't. We usually stay out there for the weekend and drive the truck back. But because my daughter was doing her public profession of faith in church, mm-hmm. I flew back and forth. And on Saturday I turned myself into police and was informed that police have charged me with four counts. Criminal charges, and that I need to turn myself into Ottawa police on the 10th, mm-hmm. which I signed saying I would do that. And that's where I am, on my way up to Ottawa to fulfill my vow to the police that I mm-hmm. show up tomorrow at court. We're called to submit ourselves to the authorities over us, and that's what I'm doing. I definitely disagree with the charges, so we'll contesting them. But yeah, it's been kind of a whirlwind 2 weeks. Like I said to a friend of mine, it's almost as crazy as the week going up, how busy the phone's been.
Just been so thankful for the support, the prayers. It's been unbelievable and humbling to receive hugs, encouragement from so many people. It's just, yeah, words can't describe it. If I'm not careful, I'm going to choke up. So,
so as of time, so as of time of recording, this is Tuesday. It's May the 9th. Now, as of time of release, this will be on Friday. So this will be after the fact. So when we release this, we'll update it with information, but you're, I mean, you're not entirely sure what tomorrow's going to look like.
No.
Yeah.
I, the lawyers from the JCCF, they've definitely been a lot of help, and they're willing to represent me. So I'm very thankful for that. And yeah, I've never had this many lawyers in my life involved with me. So it's been, that's been kind of interesting. And yeah, they, everybody's kind of asking me why now 15 months? I don't know. And we don't know. And we might not ever know, but at the same time, there's a purpose. There's a plan. And we know that our Heavenly Father is in control, and that's been that beautiful strength that I've been so thankful to experience and to know that, right? To trust in our Father in heaven and to continue trying to speak the truth and to anytime we can, we're called to bring the gospel. And we definitely experienced that in Ottawa. Sharing the gospel there was a wonderful experience to see so many people seeing that there's a higher being involved, right? There's so many people that have come to God from what happened in Ottawa, and now this as well. It's definitely makes you realize that, no, trust me, there's a plan. I don't know what it's going to be, and like you said, I don't know exactly tomorrow what's going to happen, but I'm praying that the following day I can go to the March for Life for the first time. I've been involved with the Christian Heritage Party for the last four elections. I actually ran for as a candidate for them, and always wanted to go, but just never had the opportunity.
I'm sure you going to the March for Life makes our federal government love you even more.
Yeah, hopefully they don't hold that against me and hold me too long tomorrow, but the lawyers don't see that happening. But yeah, you don't know. I did tell my wife, I don't think I'm going to jail, but they might. Like, sadly, look what they did to Tamara Leach, like a grandmother, a wonderful, humble woman who thought and believed that she needed to do what she did. And I don't think I'm going to be facing that at all. So, but at the same time, yeah, the lawyers have said, we don't really know, but we think it's just going to be a pretty quick process. Thankfully, there's going to be a lawyer there tomorrow to speak for me in court. They already have a plan of what they, you know, it's pretty standard what they're going to be doing, asking for disclosure or whatever it is. And be a month, maybe a month and a half before we actually see what they have for evidence against me. But I'm pretty confident that they don't have any evidence against me. So we'll look forward to our day in court.
So you hope to be in Ottawa on the 11th. I hope to be there too, actually, in Ottawa for the March for Life. And so hopefully we can see each other again in Ottawa. Yeah. And then if for whatever reason we can't cross paths, you are more than welcome to stop in here on your way home from Ottawa for, I may not have any more honey garlic sausages, but I'll certainly have some coffee and stuff for you as well. There's a GoFundMe that's been set up for you to help with your legal fees. It's really long and wild, so I don't know what it is, but it is in the description for this episode. So for anyone who's listening, they can look at the description and they can find the link to the GoFundMe. For anyone who wants to do an e-transfer, it's helpforharoldjonker@gmail.com. That's where they can send e-transfers if they don't do GoFundMe. I can't really point anyone to follow you on social media, but I mean, I'm sure you posted the video up on YouTube. I'm sure as stuff gets going, we'll be able to find some sort of updates somewhere. You can send me stuff as well, and I can throw it out through our channels. But I'm curious to find out how the rest of this week goes, and hopefully you find out that it's all just a petty smoke show and they don't have anything.
Yeah.
Which would be spectacular.
Yeah, that's what we're praying for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that, and I'm not comparing myself to John MacArthur at all, but if
John MacArthur would never come and have honey garlic sausages in my house.
But I remember him saying, I kept my church open. The crowd got bigger and bigger. The governor didn't like it, told him to shut down. And he said, well, no, I can't. I'm called to, gather as God's people. So he was threatened with arrest. And he said, well, you know what? I've never done prison ministry.
Right.
So
maybe it's not prison ministry. Yeah.
So something to that effect. Right. So that also gives you that encouragement too, right? That there's people that are praying for you as well. That it's been so amazing. And to have a partnership in a business that's been so supportive. It was my brother that put out that YouTube. I don't do YouTube. I'm surprised I can use a mic.
Yes.
I was surprised I could figure out Zoom on my phone when I was a town councilor, when we couldn't go into meetings anymore. So that's been a really help too. There's just so many people that have, helped with so much of this stuff that it's, with the funds that we're raising, the JCCF so far is definitely, taking my case. So the funds will, be coming in, but they'll, if I don't need it personally, which I'm hoping I don't, I can share it with a few other truck drivers that have, been already charged already a year ago, and they're facing, their court cases are coming up. Chris Barber, Tamara Leach, there's the list goes on and on on how many people are facing charges. And so the funds will be going to somebody who definitely needs support. And as well, if I'm using the JCCF going through the whole way, that's definitely where the money will be going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that's kind of the frustrating part as well, when you see how much this is costing, but yet, friends have reminded me that no, this is where the fight's at right now.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully you're in it, and here's what you need. And that's been amazing, right? Mm-hmm. Not just, people just across this country, right? Prayers in BC, New Brunswick, it's just been beautiful. And having an opportunity to meet brothers in the Lord like you, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, one of the things, like, the devil's hard at work, but yet the Lord's in control and everything's in his hands. And I've just had the opportunity to meet so many wonderful Christians, and I'm very thankful for that.
Well, I am grateful to have met you. I'm glad you stopped in. I'm glad we could hang out for a bit and chat together. It's been really good. We will be praying for you. Keep us updated with what goes on. We'll be keeping everyone else updated as well. And Lord willing, we'll see you on Friday at the March for Life and beyond.
Thursday. It's March for Life. Yeah.
It's on Thursday?
Yeah, Thursday.
Isn't it Friday the 11th? Talked about
this. Yeah, I know. You're gonna
No, the March for Life is it's
on the 11th.
Yeah, that's the Friday.
I think that's Thursday.
No, today is it the Thursday?
Today I'm is confused. What?
Yeah, is it the 9th?
Today's the 9th, so tomorrow is Wednesday the 10th.
Yes.
Thursday is the 11th.
So on Thursday in Ottawa.
Yes.
Thursday in Ottawa. You, as long as you're there,
because
you're going to the Rose Dinner.
Yes.
So as long as you're there, if I'm a day late, it'll be fine.
No, it won't be fine.
So so Thursday in Ottawa, I hope to see you there.
Yeah.
Harold, thanks so much for stopping in and joining us on the Dispatch. This has been good.
Thanks for having me. Love the word dispatch.
Yeah.
Hey there, everybody. Thanks again for tuning in to Special Interview Podcast. We really do hope that you appreciated the conversation with Andrew and Harold, and we would encourage you to look in the description below and see if you can help Harold and some of the legal fund fees, because I know he's up against it and he would really appreciate that support and that help, because he was one of the many wonderful truck drivers across our nation who helped support Canadians at a difficult time. So let us return the favor to him. We really do hope you enjoyed the podcast. We hope you would like, subscribe, rate, review, share it with your friends. And until next time, Galatians 5:1.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.
Friends, we're posting new content multiple times every week throughout our various shows on this channel. So you're going to want to subscribe to it and hit that notification bell. That way you stay up to date with everything that we're releasing here with the Liberty Coalition Canada.